All right, good morning, everyone. Good morning, good morning. Sorry about last week's cancellation, but it is a great schus, Baruch Hashem, to be able to continue in our journey through Sefer Tehillim, as well as through the Parsha Sashavua. With this week, a little bit more of an emphasis, Emir Hashem, on the Parsha. There is a dramatic episode that I want to draw your attention to. I want to begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning. Here to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Cheshvan, Stephen Tarizin, in loving memory of Steve's father, Albert Zin Bunin Tzvi, Ben Chaim Zichron Levracha, on the occasion of his 20th Yahrzeit, and our Shir sponsor for this morning, Abe and Susan Zwani, in creation of the first Yahrzeit of Mrs. Zwani's mother, Sarah Fega Bas Dov Ber HaKolin Zichron Levracha, and for a Refuah Shlema for our father, Leib Ben Aliza. We hope that in the merit, just so Mrs. Zwani, we just hope in the merit Hashem of our learning, that Emerit Hashem, the Neshama will have an Aliyah, Father will have a refuah together with Kol Cholei Yisrael and Halavai. And the schos of our learning, Emerit Hashem Levizocha, to continue to besoros tovos for all of Klal Yisrael. With that, let us begin. So the pasuk, remember again, Parshas Toldos. So these parshios themselves are filled with an incredible amount of drama. So I want to draw your attention to something that I think, no matter how many times we read the story, seems to defy comprehension. So the pasuk says in number one, Vayehav Yitzchak is Esav Kitzayit Befiv. So literally, again, Yitzchak loved Esav, Kitzai Befiv, literal translation, Kitzai Befiv, because Esav fed him. Esav was a hunter, and he would go and he would hunt and he would sustain his father with meat. V'rivka oheves es Yaakov. And Rivka loved Yaakov. What's the obvious question? Why? Why what? Good. So first of all, it's interesting, right? Because the pasuk itself seems imbalanced. The Torah gives a reason why Yitzchak loved Esav, but doesn't give a reason why Rivka loved Yaakov. Good. What else is problematic? So first of all, seems a bit superficial, right? That really, that's it? That Yitzchak loves Esav because Esav gave him meat? Okay, I got it. He likes meat. But that's the reason why you seem to be going out loving one child over the other. But what's the most fundamentally problematic thing about this pasuk? Favorites. Every story of favorites in Tanakh never ends well, right? Parenting 101. Don't play favorites. Now, every parent also knows that it is natural and normal to have a favorite. Now, what do I mean by that? It is natural and normal to have a child. Parents feel closer to certain children more than other children. They identify with certain children more than other children. They see themselves in certain children more than other children. That's normal. That's natural. But the job of a parent is to never show that. The job of a parent is that every single one of their children should know, I love all of my children equally, I would do anything and everything for all of them equally. And yet here this Torah is telling us that Yitzchak and Rivka literally are playing favorites. And again, this of course is a narrative for us. First of all, for us this doesn't sound new because we know the story. But also it's a narrative that plays itself out over and over the course of Bereshis, the downfall, and ultimately, again, the Achilles heel of the Jewish family in its, we'll call it, embryonic stage, is this constant favoritism. Again, it's here with Yitzchak and Rivka. It ultimately comes up with Yaakov and his wives. It comes up with Yaakov and his sons. And again, we see it happening over and over and over. And every time it has disastrous results. So the question, of course, becomes, how do we understand this? You know, part of the tension in general that we have when it comes to Bereshis is how to understand the Avos and the Imos. Because on one hand, these are great people. People who lived on a different plane. People who, again, although they were human, obviously, again, were just cut from a different cloth. On the other hand, it is also important to understand that they are human. And because they are human, you know, it's interesting, like in Yiddishkeit, we tend to have almost like a predisposition to deify our great leaders, to deify people. You know, understand, in let's say, for example, in Christianity, like the Pope, it's the right shir, don't worry, you're not in the wrong place, right? Like, there's a concept of like papal infallibility, right? The Pope can't make any mistakes. Papal infallibility. We do not believe in that concept in Yiddishkeit. We believe in complete fallibility, and we believe in the fact that every single human being makes mistakes. The greatest of the great, Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock. Sarah Imenu, the Ramban says, mistreated Hagar. So we have no problem. Avram Avinu made a mistake by relocating to Mitzrayim in the wake of famine. So the Torah goes out of its way to point out the failures of our great people, because once you know they have failures, then suddenly they're relatable. If they don't have any failures and they're just perfect and you can't speak about their mistakes because you just don't understand them, then that's great. Then they're very interesting, very wonderful. They mean absolutely nothing to me because I can't learn or relate to them. But the moment I understand that even great people, the greatest of the great, make mistakes, is the moment that I could relate to them on some level. The question over here is, what is the Torah trying to convey to us? What's the lesson? What's the message? So before we get to the lesson and the message, we have to try to understand the dynamics. So take a look first at Rashi. Rashi number 2 says as follows. Befiv. So Rashi writes, Ki targumo befiv shal Yitzchak, o midrasho befiv shal Esav shai satsat oso mirma de bedvar. So Rashi says over here, the way Rashi understands it, because Rashi is also bothered by this idea that how could it be that Yitzchak loves Esav because Esav gave him to eat. Kitzad b'fiv, he hunted and he put meat in his mouth. That's why he loves Yitzchak. So Rashi says, no, kitzad b'fiv actually is a little bit of a different expression. It means he hunted him. Literal translation, he hunted him with his mouth. Meaning, Esav deceived Yitzchak. He deceived him. He put on a good show of external piety, right? It's pretty easy to put on a show of external piety, right? A lot of us do it all the time, right? It's easy to go. So he put on a show of external piety for his father. And as a result, Yitzchak thought that Esav was righteous. That's what unfolded, right? That's how Rashi understands it. Now, interestingly enough, that helps to understand why Yitzchak loved Esav. What doesn't it explain? Right? It doesn't understand why Rivka loved Yaakov. In other words, there's two sides of the equation over here. So I understand. If you want to tell me that Yitzchak was deceived by his oldest son, I got it. But number one, why does that mean that he favored Esav over Yaakov? And number two, how does it explain Rivka's affinity for Yaakov? Does Naim Torah say something amazing? He says, continuing on this theme, I'll just say this outside. Actually, I'll be inside. Number three, Rav Sarasky in the Naim Torah, he says, Yitzchak haya ola tumima. So what the Zalman Torah is bothered by is Rashi says that Yitzchak was deceived. So, which begs the question, how can you be so gullible? Right? Esav was a bad guy. He was a bad man. He did bad things. The Gemara talks about the fact that he was immoral, that he worshipped idolatry, that he committed adultery. He was a bad guy. So how could it be that Yitzchak is so easily deceived by his father? How could that be? So the Azan Torah says very beautifully, he explains that at the end of the day, Yitzchak grew up in a sheltered home. He grew up in a sheltered home. There's a certain beauty of growing up in a sheltered home, but the danger of growing up in a sheltered home, the danger, is you're often unaware about what happens in the outside world. This probably is like one of the greatest challenges of parenting. You have to shelter your children to some degree, right? You must. It's an obligation. But then at a certain point in time, children do need to understand how the world works and the complexities of the world. The Zalman Torah says something amazing. Is Yitzchak was brought up in a sheltered home. Who did Yitzchak have in his life? He had a father and mother. Remember again, because Sarah Imenu told Avram when Yitzchak was a little boy. Remember again, what did she say to Avram?
Send Yishmael away.
And you know, again, who did Yitzchak get together with on Shabbos afternoons? Probably Shabbos party with his parents, right? In other words, there was no one else on the block, right? No other monotheists on the block, right? There was no one else that Yitzchak was really socializing with. Which means that Yitzchak's whole life and his whole influence were his parents. And as such, says the Zayim Torah, because of that, there was a certain sheltered mindset that he had. So it never dawned on him that his son was trying to dupe him, or that his son was trying to deceive him. Yitzchak brought that almost like that innocence to this relationship, that if my son tells me he's doing all of these things, then of course I take him at his word. It's interesting, if you skip down a little bit, Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, number 5, says something dramatically different. And this to me is an incredible piece. He says, a second factor which could only have a pernicious effect, was the difference of feelings of the parents towards the children. Unity and complete agreement of parents in the education, and the same feelings and love to all their children, even to those who are not so good. Yes, just those who acquire it most of all, even more than those who are physically weak or ill. Loving, caring, consideration, and sacrifice, that is the first fundamental condition and cornerstone of every education. So first of all, Hirsch points out over here, Torah is also telling us, no matter what your kid is doing or not doing, love them. The job of a parent, or I should say differently, what's the metric of successful parenting? The metric of successful parenting is if your child knows that you love them unconditionally, if your child knows that you are there for them no matter what occurs in life, and that your love is not conditional upon them doing certain things, whether it's being a certain kind of Jew, having a certain kind of career, doing certain, if your child knows that they have that unconditional love from you, says Rav Hirsch, that is successful parenting. So he says the fact that Yitzchak loves Esav, that's not a chiddush, right? Remember again, see, everybody was bothered by how could it be that Yitzchak loved Esav? After all, again, Esav was duping him. So Rashi says he was fooled. Azayin Torah, he was even a little bit sheltered, so he didn't even know that Esav was pulling the wool over his eyes. Rav Hirsch says, no, of course Yitzchak loved Esav, because that's the job of a parent. You don't just love the kid who's frum, you love every child. And you don't just love the child who performs to your expectations, you love every single child. Parental love can never be conditional. Now, granted, are there certain things that a child could do that could erode parental love? Of course. Of course. Are there certain things that a child could do that could change the level or intensity or the feelings of parental love? Of course. But we're talking about all things being equal. A parent is obligated to love their child unconditionally. But look at this. He says, but that's fine. So that's why I understand Yitzchak loved Esav. And had the Torah not said anything, I would have known Yitzchak loves Esav, right? And Yaakov, Rivka loves Esav and Yaakov, but Rav Hirsch says, but again, the Torah is going out of its way to highlight each of them has a kid. Yitzchak has Esav, Rivka has Yaakov. So listen to this. That Isaac's sympathies were more inclined towards Esav's, Rebekah toward Yaakov, can moreover be easily explained by the attraction of opposites. What an incredible idea. So Rav Hirsch says again, Rivka and Yitzchak were attracted to the child who was the opposite of them. What does this mean? He says, we see Isaac risen up again from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the end of the well of Be'er Lachayroi, which we'll come to in just a moment, away from the busy traffic of men, that Esav's lusty, active nature appealed to him, and that he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost, could be a support to the home, would be quite possible. So it's incredible. What was Yitzchak? Yitzchak wasn't the person who was out in the world. We spoke about this in a different share. Yitzchak wasn't the person who was out engaging in humanity. Yitzchak was not the guy in the field. He wasn't the hunter. That wasn't his force. That wasn't his koach. And now he has a son, and this son is strong, and this son is brave, and this son is out like in the wilderness, and he's conquering nature. That appealed to Yitzchak. Why? Because it's something that Yitzchak himself did not possess. On the other hand, listen to this, Rivka, on the other hand, saw in Jacob's whole being a picture of a life unfolding, of which in her father's house she had never had the remotest idea. The sympathies are similar. So on the other hand, what's Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov, the Torah says, was an Ishtam Yoshev Olam. He was steeped in spirituality. Who was drawn to that? Amazing enough, who was drawn to that? Rivka. Why was Rivka drawn to that? Because that's what she never had growing up. She grew up in the home of Lavan and Besuah. Besuah was her father. Lavan was her brother. She grew up in a home of people who were really not very good people. Not very good people. She grew up in a home where there were plenty of Esavs. right? Men who got things accomplished through physical prowess, men who were hunters, hunters, not just of animals, but hunters of other people also, men who were conniving, men who were, she knew that kind of guy. That was her father, that was her brother, and that was her son. What she had never experienced before, ultimately again, was a Yaakov. Someone so holy, someone so pure, someone so good. So her says something amazing, that Yitzchak and Rivka are drawn to the opposite of themselves, which, by the way, is a tremendous, I think, yisod in parenting also. Because often, what parents, and this parent always has to be a little bit careful with this, parents often see their children as the opportunity to accomplish the things that they never had the ability to accomplish. And you have to be careful with this, right? Because sometimes parents project their own wants and their own needs and their own desires on their children's accomplishments. And it's so important in parenting to take a step back and to say, okay, and this is very hard because there are things I want for my kid. And then there comes that moment where you have to ask yourself, this is what I want for my child, but is this what my child wants for themselves? And is this actually what I want? Is really the right thing for them? Or maybe I have to trust them to ultimately make their own decisions as well. And it's this tension, because as a parent, I still have a lot more life experience than my kid. So maybe I should be making certain decisions for them. On the other hand, is the decisions I'm making for them based on what I think they need, what maybe I want for myself, maybe things I never had for myself that I want them to have. So amazingly enough, Yitzchak sees in Esav something he never had. And Rivka sees in Yaakov something she never had. And as such, says Rav Hirsch, that's why, again, opposites attract, which I think in general is not necessarily true, like in relationships. But at least over here, Rav Hirsch says that at least this explains this dynamic. Each one drawn to the child who really possessed something they themselves did not possess. And in that child, almost saw like a sense of completion of their self. So Yitzchak, you know, it's almost like, I'll tell you, it's like on a personal level. I am not handy. I am not handy at all. And the most amazing thing is my sons and my sons-in-law are incredibly handy. And it's great. Like I should get much more nachas like from their learning and from their spiritual, which is great. But like, when I know when I see them put stuff together, I see them fix stuff or this, they're working on cars, they're working this, they're doing that. It's like, wow, this is because there is a certain sense of fulfillment when your next generation is able to do things that you yourself were not able to do. So amazingly enough, when Yitzchak sees an Esav who has this power and prowess that he does not have, he's drawn to that. And Rivka sees a Yaakov who has this spiritual power that she never saw. They're both drawn to the opposite. So two very different approaches in understanding this dynamic. Rashi, Yitzchak was deceived. Yitzchak was deceived. How was he so easily deceived by an Esav as Naim Latorah? Because at the end of the day, maybe he was brought up in a bit more of a sheltered environment. Had no reason to think that his son was deceiving him. On the other hand, of Sham Shema Far Hashem, there's no deception over here. Just each parent being drawn to the other. So first of all, and two incredible lessons already just until now. Number one, you really have to be on your game for parenting. Because children could absolutely pull the wool over their eyes of their parents. Right? And children could often go out and present things as happening one way and things are dramatic, things are going in a totally different direction. A parent has to be astute. So number one, understand also, part of parenting is we do see in our children almost like an actualization of parts of ourselves that we never have the opportunity to actualize. And while that's beautiful, every parent also has to be conscious when helping their children make decisions and to knowing, again, when we allow our children to make certain decisions, are we doing what's best for our kids or somehow are we living through our children? Your child is not there for you to live through. Your child is not the extension of your dreams and aspirations. Your child is, Baruch Hashem, someone you had the chutzpah to bring into this world, but they are their own person. And as a parent, my job is to help them, guide them in decision-making that's good for them. not decision-making that's good for my own self-actualization, or ultimately, again, for my own unmaterialized dreams and goals. Incredible. But then there's one last approach. This is what I want to spend the rest of our time on. If you take a look at source number 6. So this is actually from last week's parasha. This is where Yitzchak and Rivka first meet. So we know the story. At the end of the parasha is Chayi Sarah. The Yitzchak bo, mi bo be'er lachai ro'i, v'hu yoshev eretz ha'nagus. So remember again, we know the story. Avram dispatched Eliezer to go find a wife for Yitzchak. Eliezer goes to Avram Naharaim, finds Rivka. They're on their way back. So Eliezer is taking Rivka back to meet Yitzchak. When they're on their way back, the Torah gives us a lot of what appears to be unnecessary information. So where's Yitzchak? Yitzchak's coming back from Be'er Lachai Ro'i, V'hu Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev. Okay, very interesting. Coming back from Be'er Lachai Ro'i in the Negev, or now he's dwelling in the Negev. Okay. V'yetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basad Lef Nos Haref. So Yitzchak Avinu goes out to converse in the field before the evening. V'yisa Inaf, he lifts his eyes. V'yar, and he sees V'hinei Gmalim Ba'im. There are camels coming. That camel's coming, and those are the camels, ultimately, again, with Eliezer coming with Rivka. Okay. So the obvious question is, why does the Torah feel the need to tell me that Yitzchak is coming from Be'er Lachai Ro'i? Like, why is that piece of information? So by the way, if that place sounds familiar, it's because we had it a few parashios earlier. If you take a look at Sarah's number 8. So what happens? Vayomer la malach Hashem. Hina charav yoladet bein v'karasa shmo Yishmael, ki shama Hashem el anyech. So interestingly enough, if you go back to the first time, remember Hagar was expelled from Avram Avinu's home twice. The second time was the permanent time when she already had Yishmael, but the time before that was after she first married Avram. She's expelled from the home. The Malach meets her by the well and tells her, Hagar, either you are pregnant, you're going to become pregnant, and you're going to have a son, and you're going to call him Yishmael. And v'hu yeh para adam yada bakal v'yada bakal. Then the Malach goes on to say, this guy Yishmael is going to be a train wreck. He's going to be right. He's going to have hands on everyone. Everyone has their hands on him. V'atikra shem Hashem ador ha'elah atah kel ro'i ki amra gam halom ra'isi achrei ro'i. Look at the last pasuk, source number 8, last verse. Akein kara lebe'er be'er lachai ro'i. So amazingly enough, the place where Hagar had the nevuah, she had a prophetic vision, where she saw that she was going to have a son. And remember again, the name of her son was given to her. Then the Malach said, you're going to call this son Yishmael. Where does this interaction take place? In a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Right? And by the way, the place gets its name. Be'er means a well. Lachai Ro'i, to the one who sees for all eternity. So Hagar named the place Be'er Lachai Ro'i. So just watch how interesting this is. So Be'er Lachai Ro'i is the place where the birth of Yishmael was announced. Okay? Now, in number 6, fast forwarding a little bit, going out of order, but fast forwarding a little bit, in Parshas Chayi Sarah, the Torah tells us that as Yitzchak goes out to meet his wife, his future wife, where is he coming from? Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Okay. Now what else does the Torah tell us? Yitzchak's out in the field, and it says, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basada. Now, we translate Lasuach as to converse, which is why, by the way, interestingly enough, this is the source for what? This is the source that Yitzchak Avinu davened Mincha. Lasuach is Lashon of Sicha, Lashon of Tefillah, a wording of prayer. But if you look at the Pasha Pshat, Lasuach Basada, Rashi says, sorry, the Radak says in number 9, Lasuach Basada, Kilomar, L'tayel Bein Hasichim. Yitzchak Avinu was walking amongst the thorn bushes. That's what it is. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basada means he's walking amongst the thorn bushes. Where else have we heard about thorn bushes? Take a look at number 10. Vayichlu Hamayim Menachemis. This is the second time Hagar was expelled from Yishmael's home. Sorry, from Avram's home, where she was expelled together with her son Yishmael. So remember again, another story. The water runs out. Yishmael is dying. What does she do? Vatashlech es hayeled tachas achad hasichim. She cast the boy away underneath one of the bushes. Remember, Hagar could not watch her son die. So instead, what she did was, she put him underneath one of the bushes and she sat across the way. So how fascinating is this? Well, so you see what's happening over here? Go back up to number 6 for just a moment, once more. So the Torah says, V'yitzchak bo mi bo be'er lachai ro'i. So piece of information number one is, where is Yitzchak coming from? From Be'er Lachai Ro'i. What's unique about Be'er Lachai Ro'i? That's the place where the angel told Hagar that she's going to have a son, Yishmael. And what does Yitzchak Avinu do? Vayitzchak, vayitze Yitzchak lasuach basada. He goes out lasuach basada. Says Radak, what's lasuach basada? To walk amongst the bushes. Who cares? Who cares if he's walking amongst the bushes, or he's walking amongst the flowers, walking amongst the trees? Where else do we find the word Sichim? Sichim is where his brother, Yishmael, was cast away to die. Hagar thought her son was going to die. She said, I can't watch my child die. So she puts him by the bushes. So Yitzchak is coming from Be'er Lachai Ro'i, the place where the birth of his brother, his half-brother, was announced. He's now walking around, spaziering amongst the bushes, perhaps even the very same bushes where his half-brother was cast away, thinking that he was going to die. And now what happens after all of this? After all of this, what's the next event that occurs? Ultimately, again, number 13, goes out, right after this, who does he encounter? He encounters Yitzchak together with Rivka. It's a very short meeting with Rivka, and then what happens? Number 14, Vayiviyah Yitzchak ka'ohela sara imo, Vayikach es Rivka v'atilo lisha v'yahavel, V'nechim Yitzchak achare imo. So Yitzchak Avinu brings Rivka to the tent of his mother, he marries her, and at the end of the day he marries her, and he loves her, and he was consoled for the loss of his mother. There's something dramatic unfolding over here. Literally right before Yitzchak gets married, what does the Torah allude to in two ways? It alludes to the story of Yishmael. He comes from Be'er Lachai Ro'i, the place where Yishmael's birth was announced. Ultimately, again, he goes out to walk amongst the bushes, perhaps the very bushes where Yishmael was cast away to die. And by the way, Sicha ultimately is a lashon of tefillah, a lashon of prayer also. Take a look at number 12. I'm sorry, going out of order over here. The Medrash says, Vayetze Yitzchak, Lasuach Basad Lefnos Arv, Lehispala Lefnei Boro, Shehaya Moro Tamid Alpanav Shalol Yinaseyu, Leficha Hosif Amasa Aviv, Shaviv Haya Mispalel Beboker Levad, Vezeh Hosif Akavala Mincha. Yitzchak Avinu goes out to Davin, and Yitzchak Avinu Davin more than his father. Because remember again, when did Aram Avinu Davin? When did he Davin? In the morning. And now when is Yitzchak davening? Yitzchak's davening in the afternoon as well. Why? Because ultimately, again, the Medrash says that Yitzchak Avinu ultimately, again, wanted to have more strength than his father. Okay. So now let's put all of these disparate pieces of information together and see if we could create some type of comprehensive narrative. Yitzchak Avinu, once again, is coming from where? Let's review. Be'er Lachai Ro'i. What happened in Be'er Lachai Ro'i? The announcement of the birth of Yishmael. What is he doing? Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada. Lasuach basada could either mean he's walking amongst the bushes. Bushes, we've heard about bushes before. Yishmael was cast amongst the bushes to die when the water ran out. Sicha also means he went to pray. Says the Medrash, what is he praying about? He's praying ultimately again that he not be tested like his father and that he have more strength than his father. His father only davened in the morning. Yitzchak is davening in the morning and the afternoon. I need more strength than my father. What's happening over here? Perhaps what's unfolding over here is as follows. That in the and then again, what happens right after this piece of information? He meets Rivka. They get married. Perhaps what is unfolding over here is, in the moments right before Yitzchak Avinu is about to begin his own home, he makes himself a promise. And what's the promise? I will not have a rejected child. I will not have a son who will be cast out. My father had a son who was cast out. My father Avram had a Yishmael. He had Yishmael, and he sent away Yishmael. And Yitzchak saw, remember again, Yitzchak Avinu saw that. He was a little boy, but he was guaranteed, he was old enough to see what happened in the home. And there's no question that Aram Avinu bore the pain of that dramatic and traumatic decision for the rest of his life. And perhaps what's unfolding over here in the very moments before Yitzchak begins his own home is almost like a pledge to himself. I will not allow this to happen to me. This will not occur in my family. There will not be one who is accepted and one who is rejected. In my home, everyone will be accepted. There is no child who will be cast out from within my home like there was a child who was cast out from my father's home. He makes this promise to himself, this commitment within his own home. Yes. Yitzchak doesn't know that. How would Yitzchak know that? Yitzchak, again, Avram and Sarah were good parents. They did not have major life discussions in front of their kids. Right? So again, he has no idea about that conversation. Why would he know about that conversation? So Yitzchak Avinu again decides he is not going to have this dynamic in his home. Again, just to be clear, it doesn't mean that Yitzchak Avinu was faulting his father for what happened. You know, sometimes people have to do things because they have to get done. It doesn't mean that there's fault. But Yitzchak Avinu saw the pain and the trauma that that decision caused his father, and it did. Avram Avinu lived with that pain to the end of his life. And he pledges to himself, I'm not going to have that in my home. Why is this important? Because this helps us to understand. Remember again, let's go all the way back, full circle. Source number one. Now this whole thing begins to make sense. Yitzchak Avinu was not fooled by his son. Right? He's Yitzchak. Even if you want to say he grew up a little bit sheltered. Right? Even if you want to say at the end of the day that perhaps again Avram and Sarah were role models and again they cocooned him in a cocoon of Kiddusha. Yitzchak Avinu has been around the block. Right? When you're willing to give your life and willing to literally go up on the altar of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you begin to see life with a certain sense of clarity. Yitzchak Avinu was not duped. He was not duped. But rather, again, Yitzchak Avinu is absolutely unequivocally committed to keeping Yishmael in the home. Esav, to keeping Esav within the home. Esav will not be rejected. I lived through a family that had to expel a child. Yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to do it, Simon is said to do it, all the right reasons, but sometimes in life, you could do all the right things, but it doesn't mean that there's not a tremendous amount of pain. So Yitzchak Avinu decides, I am going to love Esav. Yitzchak makes a declaration, I'm going to love this kid even more. I'm going to go out of my way to love him even more. And again, by the way, we often think that because the pasuk says that he loved Esav, somehow means he didn't love Yaakov. Chas v'shalom. He loved Yaakov. Of course he loved Yaakov also. But at the end of the day, he made a conscious decision to keep Esav within the family, to keep Esav within the fold. Now, if we were to stop right here, that's beautiful and incredible, right? Beautiful and incredible. That look what Yitzchak Avinu did. He understood who his son was. He understood what the challenges were. But at the end of the day, he decided that no matter what, I am not going to have a repeat of my father's home. I'm not going to let that happen in my family. The Shaila is, and it's beautiful. Like I said, if we're to stop here, a tremendous lesson in parental love. And a tremendous lesson about the lengths to which a parent must go in order to keep a family together. But the question is, did it work? Did it work? Now, when you look at the psukim, it seems like it absolutely did work. When Yitzchak Avinu dies, what does the pasuk say? Vayikberu oso, right? Yaakov ve'esav banav. And Rashi points out over there, Rashi says, Malamed Shechazra Esav b'tshuva. Esav b'tshuva. Again, his descendants are a different story. But it sounds like at first glance that it actually worked. But take a look at number 15. And this is incredible. This is from the Sefer Shemen HaTov. He writes, V'yishlomar od, V'mashinemar v'ayad Yitzchak Esav. Hainu, Mishnei Tamim. Yitzchak loved Esav. For two reasons. Hainu, he says, Dahainu tam echad kitzai befiv, v'atam sheni ki rifko heves es Yaakov. V'imkein, yargish Esav es atzmo ki mekupach u'mibli mishi es dabek bo. So this is incredible. Shemar Tov posits that while Yitzchak was committed ultimately again to keeping Esav within the family, Rivka was committed to ultimately cultivating Yaakov as the heir, the spiritual heir, to his father Yitzchak. And so Yitzchak was concerned that as Rivka was grooming Yaakov for this future spiritual inheritance, Esav would feel forgotten and forsaken. So what does Yitzchak do? Yitzchak compensates. He overcompensates by even loving Esav more in order to go ahead and keep Esav within the family. He says, "Lachin mitzat hadin rachim Yitzchak al Esav avoso v'zehu rak ava lemalos chesrono." See, he loved him more. He overcompensated. But why did he overcompensate? Because he felt that maybe Rivka was putting the bulk of her attention towards Yaakov. But look what he writes. He says, "We move on." Shalaava kazos ein lakiyum. But this type of love never really works. Now, what does this mean? So I think what's unfolding over here is as follows. Sometimes in life, we are so desperate to believe something, and we are so desperate to go ahead and want things to be a certain way that we create for ourselves this reality. The only problem is that our reality is not real. It's a little bit of cognitive dissonance. I need life to look a certain way. Father, you see this, by the way, very often with parents and children, right? Right? Sometimes every teacher knows that there's that parent who will never believe anything negative about their child. Right? Your child may say, Your child maybe has, you know, some type of learning differences that they need to get assessed. Not my child, right? And again, why? Because sometimes parents are so desperate to believe that life is a certain way, their children are a certain way. And you see this, by the way, right? When every parent has this dream for what their family is going to look like. Right? My marriage is going to look like this. My children are going to look like this. My life, my home is going to look like this. And then, beautiful, those dreams are great. And then when actual reality sets in and suddenly my marriage doesn't look this way, and my kids don't look this way, and my home doesn't look this way. So you have a choice. Choice number one is just pretend that everything does look the way you want it. You could do that. And many people go through life like that. They pretend that everything is exactly perfect, just how they want it, never addressing any of the problems, never addressing any of the difficulties. Or you could accept that the reality that you have may be different than the dreams that you dreamt, and take the reality that you have, embrace it, lean into it, and maximize it. I think what's unfolding over here is that Yitzchak Avinu was so desperate for a cohesive family and so desperate to avoid that which happened in his own home growing up. One child accepted, one child rejected, that he viewed Esav as something that Esav was not. And that he viewed Esav as a good kid, when in fact, Esav was not the good kid. Esav had a beautiful neshama, there's no question, and Esav had his struggles. But Esav was not who Yitzchak thought he was. But it's not because, I don't think it's because Esav fooled his father. Maybe he did also. But also Yitzchak fooled himself a little bit. Yitzchak was so desperate to go ahead and see his family, create a family that was going to be in a certain surah, that he refused to acknowledge the reality of what was. Now, by the way, I want to point out, remember what happens later on in this parasha, the most famous part of the parasha, what happens is the story of the birthright, right? Remember again this story, right? Yaakov buys the birthright from Esav and then masquerades inside. Who tells Yaakov to masquerade? Who tells Yaakov to go out and masquerade inside as Esav? Who tells him to do it? Rivka, his mother. This story is the most bizarre story in the entire Torah, right? First of all, Rivka, what are you doing? Telling your kid to dress up as Esav? Right? And that's, and by the way, even if it works, what's the bigger problem with the story? Deception. You also can't steal brachos. Brachos come from Hashem, right? It's like, imagine for a moment you're at someone's house, right? On Shabbos night, and they're about to bless their children, and you're a little bit rude. You push the kid out of the way, right? And you go under the father's hands, right? And he puts, I got the bracha. No, you didn't. That's not how brachos work. You can't steal brachos. Rav Hirsch says, you're right. Rav Hirsch says, do you know what Rivka was doing? You can't steal brachos. Rav Hirsch was trying to show her husband. I'm sorry. Rav Hirsch says, Rivka was trying to show her husband how easily he can be deceived. That's what she was doing. She was showing that with a little bit of dress up, right? Yaakov puts on Esav's clothing and brings in a tray of meat, and suddenly you think he's Esav. And if Yaakov could dress up and bring you lunch and you think that he's Esav, then imagine how easy it is for Esav to show you that he's a Yaakov. The plan was never to steal the blessings, because you can't steal blessings. But Rav Hirsch says something amazing. Rav Hirsch said, this is a tremendous chiddush. Rav Hirsch says, Rivka was trying for years to tell her husband that our family is not the way you think it is. And our family is not the way you wish it to be. And our family is not the way you desire it to be. It's just not that way. And Yitzchak refused to listen to her. He refused. Until she finally had to resort to this ruse, to this plan, to show her husband how easily he really can be deceived. But why? Because Yitzchak was so desperate for this vision of his son. Vayetze Yitzchak mi be'er lachai ro'i. Vayetze Yitzchak, sorry, Yitzchak bambo be'er lachai ro'i. Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. He saw the pain of rejecting a child, and he was not going to have it. So he convinces himself, not going to happen in my family. To the point that he convinced himself of a reality that was not real. He convinced himself that his son was a particular person who he was not. And by the way, it was to Esav's detriment. It was to Yitzchak's detriment. Because perhaps had Yitzchak been honest with himself about who Esav was, perhaps there could have been other forms of intervention. Perhaps there could have been other forms of interaction. But Yitzchak Avinu was so set on convincing himself that his family was going to be a certain way that he just couldn't see the reality for what it was. And perhaps this is the lesson that the Torah is coming to teach us. And it's a multifaceted lesson. It's a lesson by our own families. Right? Are we able to see our marriages for what they are? Are we able to see our children for who and who they are? Or do we get so hung up on what we want things to be that we refuse to see them as they are? Do we create for ourselves this cognitive dissonance? This is my marriage. No, that's not your marriage. It's not your marriage. The marriage has many challenges and many issues, but you can pretend they're not there, but they're not going anywhere. They're only going to get worse. No, this is my child. My child is perfect. Child is not perfect. And if you don't address the imperfections now, they will only amplify and become even more challenging as time goes on. But it's not just true in our marriage and our children. It's true with ourselves as well. Right? How many of us walk around life ignoring the shortcomings, the frailties, and ultimately the mistakes that we've made? Because often, it's just too painful to deal with. So instead of dealing with all of my stuff, I just create an alternative reality in which everything is great. Everything is fine. What problems? No problems. What's broken? Nothing's broken. Everything's fine. Or we do even better. What else do? We go ahead and we construct alternative theologies. You know, Avsham Shalfarish also brings down, he says the difference between, you know, what's between idolatry and Yiddishkeit, idolatry and monotheism is, he says in Judaism, we make ourselves in God's image. Idolatry is make God in your image. Idolatry essentially says like this. You begin by identifying what do you want to do in life? What do you want to do? No problem. After you decide what you want to do, now create a theology around the things you want to do. It's fantastic. Fantastic, right? Because no one wants to live outside of the parameters of law. Just the difference is in Judaism, I don't get to make the rules. I have to conform myself to God's rules. Idolatry, make your own rules and just adapt them to the lifestyle you want. How many of us go through life like that? Right? I know that there are things in my lifestyle that are flawed, that are not right. I know there are things that I'm doing that are just not correct. But instead, I'm just going to create for myself whatever it is, a different theology, a different hashkafa, a different approach that justifies the things that I want to do. And it's happy. I'm just part of a different mindset, part of a different theology. But deep down, it's not true. Deep down, I know that the things that I'm doing, the life that I'm leading, is not to the level that I can be performing. But we often just deceive ourselves, delude ourselves, create these alternative realities for ourselves, because sometimes the truth It's just a bit too difficult and a bit too painful to really encounter. And perhaps that's the lesson of the story. Many different lessons. A lesson of unconditional love for every single child, absolutely. A lesson ultimately, again, in not playing favorites because it never goes well. A lesson ultimately, again, how a parent has to make sure that every child feels loved and supported by them. But also a lesson about being honest with ourselves in life. It is so easy to create the ultimate vision for what I want out of every aspect and pretend that my life conforms to all of those visions. The problem is at some point in time, everything does come crumbling down. You know, Yitzchak Avinu has that moment. When does he have that moment? You know, after Yaakov, quote unquote, gets the brachas and then leaves, Esav comes in. Right? Esav comes in. And Esav says, Kumavi, get up, my father. Here, I brought you lunch. And Yitzchak Avinu says, who are you? Who are you? And he says, I'm Esav. And remember, what does the Torah say? Vayecharad Yitzchak charada gedola. Yitzchak Avinu was filled with great fear. Why? Because everything came tumbling down. I made a mistake. I pretended Esav was someone who he was not. Instead of engaging him and dealing him with who he was and not being afraid, maybe there will be a rejection, right? Maybe because remember again, to a certain degree, that is the paradigm. There's a Yitzchak and there's a Yishmael. Yitzchak continues, Yishmael sent away. There was a Yaakov and there was an Esav. But Yitzchak Avinu was so set on believing things were going to be a certain way that he would not allow himself to see the reality. Well, reality presents itself to anyone and everyone at a certain point. You could only run from reality for so long. Yitzchak Avinu has that moment of truth, that moment of clarity, and when it set in, Vayecharad Yitzchak Charada Gedola, there was a tremendous and overwhelming fear. Maybe I didn't do the right thing by Esav. Maybe I didn't do the right thing by my family. Maybe I was so convinced in seeing things a certain way that I was unable to see things for what they really are. And a tremendous lesson for us to bring to our lives as well. Whether it's in our relationships, whether it's with our children, or whether it's in our own lives. Do we see ourselves? Do we see our spouse? Do we see our relationships? Do we see our children for who and what they really are? Are we so caught up in the way we want things to be that we're not actually able to see them for how they are? And the longer we resist that temptation to see, or we resist that fear of seeing things for how they are, the less equipped we are to make good and informed decisions for ourselves and for others in life, and the more ill-equipped we are to become the best version of ourselves. Reality comes for everyone. And everyone has that Vayecharad Yitzchak Charada Gedola moment. We have to find the strength to be able to see ourselves, our children, our marriage, and our lives for what they truly are. And even if there's a little bit of disappointment, because maybe my life is not the way I wanted it to be. And maybe my life is not the way I envisioned it to be. And you know, when you have that moment, it is. It's disappointing. It's deflating. But it's also empowering. Because in that moment where you're able to embrace and acknowledge your reality, that's the moment where you're able to affect real, incredible, and profound change. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up Mirat Hashem next week. Next week, hopefully, we'll get back a little bit to Tehillim as well. And I shkaya, everyone. Sure.